Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Ross. I'll bet you can hear me. But are you really listening? Well, it's easy to listen to this to this part. But as we move into the show, we're going to challenge your listening, and mine as well, because we're going to talk about a book called Listen to Succeed, How to Identify and Overcome Barriers to Effective Listening. And we're going to be listening to the author of Listen to Succeed, and it'll be very interesting to listen properly. So we are now talking with Leslie Shore. Leslie, welcome.
Thank you so much. It's wonderful to be on with you today.
Sure. Your voice sounds very far away, so if you could speak closer to the mic. So,
is this any better? Your voice sounds far away also.
Okay, so maybe the program will pick it up and fix it for us. I'm sure the engineer is listening. We like listening, don't we?
We definitely do, especially when we're listened to.
Right. We're not so good at listening to others. Depends, and that's what we're going to talk about, because it really is something we can all do better. And I know I can always do better.
Peter. Oh, go ahead.
I can always do better because I watch myself listening a lot and knowing that I'm not as good at it, because what I'm really bad at is interrupting. And that means I'm
You're
not listening well
company,
enough.
You're in excellent company, Peter.
What's that?
You're in excellent company.
I'm sure. So this is something you actually do in your life, is you advise people, companies, about listening and set up so that it's how we can recognize the factors that go into good listening, so that we can arrange in our lives to listen better, because we see what gets in the way of our listening.
And that's indeed, Peter, why I wrote the book Listen to Succeed, because I was lucky enough to have a grandmother and a mother and a father who really were incredibly effective listeners. And I could tell the difference that their listening had on the affect of the people that they met and that they were speaking to. People's self-esteem actually rose in their presence because of the way in which that they were being listened to.
And I think it has to do with presence. Your family, they were willing to be present for you, and you knew that they were respecting your presence. No matter what you said, they were honoring your presence.
I think, Peter, you have actually hit the number one on the hit parade in terms of the four major components of effective listening. And the very first one that I talk about in my book is being present. And it sounds maybe easy, but it requires getting one's ego out of the way so that what is coming towards you from the person that you're listening to gets a full hearing without judgment. And, boy, that's a tough thing to do, and it needs definitely to be practiced.
I think so much of it has to do with respect. And it's respect for the people you're listening to, but so much of it also has to do with self-respect. Because if you're struggling for your own self-respect, your ego will get in the way.
it's really an excellent point. I think when folks are listening in a way to be able to respond and show either that they are equally as intelligent or have a story that illustrates what the other person was talking about, or they, in listening, are not sure how they'll come off in the conversation, then they have what we would consider a performance anxiety barrier, possibly a power and control barrier, and all of these can get in the way, and you may not even know that that's what's happening. It's invisible.
Yeah,
that is what's happening. And you don't mean to be disrespectful, and you don't know that it's coming from some self-esteem issues that you might have. It's so invisible, Peter, that's one of the reasons I created the listening assessment profile, so that you could actually pinpoint which of the eight major barriers are getting in your way and know that you can actually do something about it.
Right. That's so important to understand yourself better in your behavior and your own self-worth, self-esteem issues. Some years ago, I did a radio show about with the author of a book called Conversational Intelligence. And it had to do with the corporate world and how people are on the defense all the time. And there's all these power plays, and you never know how honest the person is you're talking to or how open they are to anything that they want from you.
Mm-hmm.
And how, you know, it might be a role of domination that they're in or that you might be in that can't converse intelligently with the other party because you have all of these hidden factors, and especially in corporations where it has to do with, you know, power and value that personal value that override the subject matter.
And you're absolutely right on that, Peter. And the quote that I always come back to, because he was such an amazing, amazing speaker himself, is Winston Churchill, who said, "Courage is what it takes to stand up and speak. Courage is also what it takes to sit down and listen." And in the United States, we have this myth that it is the speaker that has the power. In reality, it is the listener that has the power, because it's through listening that you learn. It's through listening that you understand trends in your own company or in the industry that you're in. You're not learning anything when you're talking. You learn when you listen.
Right. But I want to come back to that sense of power or powerlessness. I think it's more that when we're listening to people, it creates an expectation that we are in choice, that we are choosing to listen, and that we are choosing to benefit from what we're hearing. And there's so much at play in that can work, you know, pro and con, depending on where we're coming from. And so I think this conversation we're having is very important because your book is very important because we need to work on ourselves, not only on ourselves, but just on the whole technology of the listening process and what it entails on every factor, you know, because in the book, you're not talking about just one or two things. I mean, your book covers everything, including...
That was the idea.
Right, including physical conditions that you're hearing in. You know, can you actually hear the other person properly? Are you sitting in the right place? Are the acoustics correct? And are you in a seat that, you know, that is not distracting you? And,
right.
You know, there's so many obstacles that can interfere with being able to listen comfortably to somebody so we can pay attention. But also...
And what's really interesting about that, Peter, is that most people do not understand that the external barriers are something that they can have complete control, almost complete control over. They can decide where they sit. I always, in a restaurant, am facing the wall because my friends know if I'm facing into a restaurant, I'm distracted beyond belief. So this is something I know about myself, and that physical thing can be the very beginning of a poor listening experience if you are not, if you don't understand what those barriers might be that you might have. And some people, Peter, do not have that barrier at all, but the person that they're talking with might. And so it's really important to understand what these barriers are and how they can affect the whole communication process.
I'm thinking of restaurants and how noisy they are. Or even, I hate to be at weddings trying to talk to people when the music is so loud that you don't even know how you can have a conversation at all. And
when you talk about restaurants, I am known in the Twin Cities. When I walk into a restaurant and the music is either acid, that's what I'll just call it, or too loud, I will ask the server to please have them turn it down because I know I'm not the only one in that restaurant that is elevating their voice to get above the music, which then creates this spiral effect of no one being able to listen effectively. And they're pretty good about actually turning the music down, which I'm very thankful for.
Especially when you give them your card and show that you're a listening expert.
It is true. I have to admit that it is true. And when we get also to the point of working with corporations and government entities and that type of thing, one of the things that I talk to them about a lot is creating a listening environment when you're having a meeting and how to do that and how to make sure that people can listen effectively just in terms of the environment that they're either sitting in at a meeting or even a one-on-one. The environment makes a huge difference, and noise is definitely a big part of that.
Right. And there's so much that you have in your book about the environment itself and the technology of a voice and what it takes to in proximity to the person who's speaking. And also what's interesting is that you even talk about the speed of words that come out of people. And that we can hear, listen to people who speak very fast, but when they speak too slow, it's too easy to be distracted.
Oh, our mind wanders like crazy. That's the thing about knowing these things makes you, and we talk about choice, makes you be at choice about whether you're going to continue to listen or what you need to do to be able to listen to someone who is speaking quite slowly, because our minds do start doing the grocery list or what's up next at work or whatever. And
right.
to the point that you're talking about, Peter, there are so many moving parts to what listening is, because listening is a process. You take in the sound and the words that are coming towards you, and you are processing it through your experience, through your history, through your emotions, through your self-esteem, and in all of that, there are so many moving parts. And
right.
that's why it takes really being present and really understanding what your barriers might be to your being present.
I'm thinking of people who intentionally speak slow because they want to make sure they keep your attention, and they speak slow and carefully, and they don't realize that they're speaking too slow, and they can't hold your attention that way.
And what's interesting about that, Peter, is when I teach either seminars or I do keynotes or sessions with corporate partners, is that I really talk to them about having people actually pair up into listening partners after they've been through a session, so that their listening partner can actually give them feedback on, hey, this is how well you did in that presentation. Too fast, too slow, no inflection, whatever it might be. Or I noticed that you were totally distracted during a particular meeting. Maybe you would like to sit in a different place. So they pair up as partners, and they're able to really help each other with the barriers that the other one has.
One thing that I always find interesting, both for myself and others, is eye contact and
yes.
how hard it is sometimes to keep eye contact, and how other times it's much easier. And I'm not sure if it's true that women make easier eye contact than men do.
I'm not sure it's true either. Eye contact is a very funny thing. Because sometimes people get very uptight when you give them really good eye contact. And sometimes people are very honored by the fact that you're giving them total eye contact. And one of the most important things as a listener is to look at what the body language is of the person you're listening to understand, okay, what degree do I use on my eye contact? How often do I break it, cast my eyes downward, and then come back up? It definitely is a skill to be able to see what the comfort level is. But I can tell you, eye contact is literally the most important piece of body language within a conversation. If you don't have it, the person does not feel listened to, no matter what your reply might be.
And then there's also an idea that I'm getting about whether people are talking with us or at us. And very often people are just, you know, talking at us. And I've done a lot of radio shows with guests that really talk at the audience and not with the audience. And there is a difference. And it has to do with their own peace of mind, I think, and comfort. Again, coming back to the idea of being present and whether they just have a spiel that they're delivering their message that has to get across, so they speak at, versus trying to be inclusive with the audience and speaking with. Does that make sense?
And Peter, you couldn't be more right. And this is an issue where self-confidence comes in, that if you're talking at, it really means that you are not confident enough to have what we're having. We're having a wonderful conversation that we're ping-ponging back and forth with. We're listening to each other. When you have a spiel that you're getting across, one of the problems with that is you have no idea whether or not what you're trying to get across is actually landing. Is there any interaction at all? Are you paying attention to the listener's body language? And one of the things that I work with in terms of salespeople is if you get into the talk at mode, which I love your label of that, you are going to lose your customer, because the most important thing is to find out what their needs are so that you can tailor what you're saying to that customer. And you can't do that if you're talking at. It's got to be talk with.
I'm laughing because there's so many times when I'm in social groups and, let's say, having dinner, and my wife kicks me under the table and says, you know, basically, stop lecturing. And I don't think I am. But to my wife, I am. So, you know, and I appreciate that because, you know, we all get carried away. And sometimes if we feel like our audience is enthusiastic enough, we feel that they're giving us so much rope that we take too much of it.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting because, Peter, when I talk about listening, obviously I'm enthusiastic about it, and I can talk about it for days, but I have also realized because of the need to understand what the needs are of the people listening to you, that the body language and understanding of it and being able to be nimble and flex with what's going on is also critically important as speaker and as a listener to your audience, because understanding the body language is you listening to your audience and being able to take a break and ask if there are any questions or comments, or just let people emote and respond to what it is that you're saying. When
right.
they're finished with that conversation with you, they feel so listened to. Their self-esteem and confidence goes through the roof, and their blood pressure goes down when they're being listened to. And who wouldn't want more of that?
Sure. And yet it can be a conversation. It doesn't have to be, well, I surrender now, and I'm just going to listen to you for the next half hour. Because
right.
That doesn't include a conversation.
It's so... You're really getting to the crux of it, because when we talk about communication, we are talking about creating relationship at whatever level. And the talk at does not create relationship. The talk with creates relationship. And being really cognizant of what's going on in the other person comes way back to the very thing that you said at the very beginning, which was being present, getting the ego out of the way, and understanding what's important in a conversation is a give and take where both people, or as many people in the conversation there are all getting their needs met and are all learning and are all enjoying what is happening.
Right.
Being present takes practice.
And I can see there are times when I just have things that I want to impart on people.
Mm-hmm.
And, for instance, the importance of vitamin D, you know, something like that. And and I get unrelenting about it. And
sure.
And it can be, I think it can be cumbersome. And I lose awareness. But then again, I'm getting my point across.
Well, and what's interesting is that when we talk about the assessment and the book, Listen to Succeed, at listentosucceed.com, one of the things that I think is really, I made a point of saying that your listening is not either good or bad. It's either effective or not as effective as you would like it to be, because you are the listener you are as a result of how you grew up, what listening was like in your family of origin, and possibly in your first couple of jobs. And the thing is that it's not hardwired. You can actually make changes. And over the years, that has happened to a lot of people that I've worked with, and someone I had in one of my classes 7 years ago actually just got in touch with me and said, everything you said in that class stuck with me, and now I want you to come and talk to my employees about listening. And that was seven years ago.
This is so great talking
on
to
his
you.
Listening since then.
Yeah, I mean, to see how long-lasting your information is is very important. That's why everybody should get this book, Listen to Succeed, and really work on it, because I don't think it ever ends. We always have to be present and work on our presence and identify
Absolutely.
All these
Let me
things.
Tell you, there are friends of mine who will say, Leslie, you're having a barrier to effective listening. And it's funny because being, quote-unquote, the expert doesn't
right.
mean that I am perfect at it. I am
right.
constantly growing.
That's true for all of us. Leslie Shore, the author of Listen to Succeed. This is so wonderful talking to you. Thanks for being a guest on the show. I've really enjoyed it.
Me too, Peter.
And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver, heartriver.org, or 212-222-7748. I'd love to hear from you, and thank you so much for listening.